Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World, episode 131. I'm Hirshan Jordan, and I'm very pleased today that joining me is Mark Otero, who is the CEO at Azure Games. How's it going, Mark?
Good. How are you doing, John?
Good. Very glad to have you on. We have plenty to talk about. Normally for an opening question, I get people to sort of give us their potted history. But given you've been in games for an awful long time, and I think probably some of the stuff is fairly well known, I'm going to ask you a bit of a more direct question. So I guess famously, the game we're going to be talking about, amongst other things today, Legions and Legends, is your ninth sort of hero collectible RPG. So you're extremely experienced in that space. People may have played some of your previous games, Heroes of Dragon Age and Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, both sort of seminal free-to-play mobile games. And sort of famously, you've said, you know, you've made eight of these games and Legions and Legends is the ninth one. So I'm kind of thinking, and it's a question we get asked a lot in the blockchain game space, is, you know, why did you want to come back and make a blockchain game, given that your sort of deep understanding of the genre? And, you know, often we get told, oh, blockchain's a sort of a technology, a solution looking for a problem, all that sort of stuff. But clearly you've thought in your head, you have a very deep knowledge about how these games work at a sort of fundamental level, and you've somehow, you know, you've sort of thought of blockchain as a technology that sort of fits within that sort of concept. So can you sort of give us how your mind worked when you were putting those two sort of different things together?
Yeah, you know, it was in Q4 of 2021. And that year, earlier that year, I had purchased, some crypto as part of my portfolio allocation for the first time. Just because it forced me to learn more about it. And so I'm an engineer by trade as well. And I started to look into Solana and started to do some programming.
Okay.
And it dawned on me that there was, you know, true ownership on chain. And the idea of ownership intrigued me. Because as a dungeon master, you know, players carry with them, you know, player character sheets, and I liken them to early versions of paper NFTs. So yeah. For my reptilian mind, I was like, interesting. And, and prior to that, I had made eight, free-to-play RPG games with, you know, selling millions of dollars, hundreds of million dollars in virtual goods. And, so I understood the concept of virtual goods. And then there was this connection moment, like, oh, interesting. Players have more utility. They're not just defined by the constraints of the game in terms of what they can do with them. It was at that point in time that the journey for crypto, so I came really late.
Yeah.
Really, really late. And that was when it dawned on me that, you know, perhaps this is the next evolution of digital goods. So I thought about it very practically. And that got me really excited. Got me excited because, you know, after making eight of these, you know, the same type of games, of course, with innovations along the way, I grew bored. And so it was really the challenge and the opportunity to investigate this new technology that piqued my curiosity. And when I begin to future cast and say, okay, how is this going to evolve? What new potential player types can arise from this? And how can it make the experience stronger? I didn't have good answers for that, which was great news at the time, because it meant, all right, this will be my ninth game. It was really just like that. And it didn't take me long to make the decision. It was in December around Christmas that I started calling my old friends, who I'd built many games with before, and say, hey, I'm back. There's a new opportunity. There's some big problems to solve. Let's go solve them together. And pretty rapidly, the studio came together. And over 50% of the studio, we're about 47 people now.
Okay.
We've all worked together, you know, doing one game or eight games. And so we're like, oh yeah, let's do it. This is something new. Let's see what this is all about.
Good. And it's sort of interesting that you was maybe if blockchain hadn't come along, you would have still made another game. But clearly, you know, you stopped making games because, as you say, once you made eight of them, you've pretty much teased out all of the sort of variations sort of you can. And you know, you being slightly modest there with your track records. I mean, Star Wars: Galaxy of Heroes has done over $1 billion of revenue and is still EA's biggest mobile game, however many years after it came out. So it's not just you were sort of, you know, you were very successful in that sort of in that line of work. So it's sort of interesting, and I think it's also interesting when some other people who've been in the game space for a long time and who weren't into crypto have sort of followed a similar story, but they've not come at it from a sort of crypto bros or a sort of you know, number go up sort of attitude, which some people have. There's not necessarily anything wrong with that, but they've come at it, as you say, sort of seeing this new technology and going, oh, I can, that gives me something extra that we've not been able to do in games. So I guess there was never going to be, you were never not going to make a sort of hero collection RPG, because that was sort of what you know. But how do you think this game is shaping up to be, you know, different to what you've seen before? What's the juice in it?
You know, what would be helpful is a little bit of backstory.
Yep.
You know, I grew up in South Korea,
mm-hmm.
of very modest means. And, you know, I fell upon a game called Dungeons and Dragons mm-hmm. and immediately fell in love with the second edition rule set and became a player for years and eventually a dungeon master. And I was always captivated by the breadth of unlimited storytelling that you can have, as well as playing with my toys, right? Small and large toys. And that eventually led me to founding a gaming company above a yogurt shop that I founded.
Yep.
And in the stock room there, I've always wanted to create the large toy box experience where you play with small and large toys. And I think a lot of us can relate with that growing up, where, you know, we didn't put rules in like traditional games do, right? Where it says, hey, you know, only your small figurines can fight small figurines and your medium figurines can only fight medium figurines. And so this was generally a rule for all collectibles and combat RPG games. And I've tried to solve it a number of times and we weren't able to pull it off. And so, you know, for our ninth RPG game, where you're collecting heroes, you're collecting monsters, we wanted to be able to mix and match small, medium, and large in the same way that we did as children growing up. And so we wanted to create a truly an immersive sandbox experience for players to tell their stories through their collection. And so in addition to Web3 and the potential benefits it can provide for games, it was really the large toy box experience that inspired me to give this another crack. You know, we tried this in Dragon Age. We did an okay job with that. We tried in Star Wars and gave up. And so this was something that I knew that I'd eventually return back to again. Mm-hmm. And I believe we have good solutions now that are balanced quite well for our ninth game.
Well, I guess it's always helpful not to be using. I mean, obviously one of the success reasons for Star Wars was using the Star Wars IP, but equally that comes with its own restrictions on sort of the sort of stuff you can do. And it's interesting you were saying about the small and the you know, the big and the small scale, because definitely that comes out from the sort of artwork you've been putting out for the game, where you have these big huge golems and things and these little tiny little characters, and that's a, you know, sort of obviously quite a, you know, a strong art sort of signature style you've got there. So I don't think you've shown much gameplay. There's been sort of snippets of sort of videos around, and the gameplay bit, as far as you can tell, looks, I mean, maybe it's wrong to say, sort of like a sort of standard sort of RPG type thing. Would you say that the innovation is not really happening on the gameplay side of things? The gameplay, obviously you need to have an exciting sort of game, but it's more around the sort of the thematic side and the ownership side is where you're really trying to sort of leverage the new opportunities.
I would say that, you know, we're still very early in the development process, and we're going to show a lot more towards the end of this year.
Okay.
But it's incredibly difficult to balance small, medium, and large figurines.
Mm.
And I believe we have the right approach. And so for us, the first thing that, you know, as part of a sequencing is we've got to get the player controls down right and the camera so that you can, so that the camera system is smart enough to know when to zoom out, change its positioning, not only depending on what's happening in the environment, what you're up against, but also to the size of the character that you decide to summon or bring into battle. Those are not easy problems to solve. And so everything that we've shared so far is really answering questions about the perspective of the camera, the player controls. Because without mastering that and doing that well, nothing else really matters, right? Yeah. Players, when they feel it, they're like, oh, this is kind of janky, or, you know, the player doesn't feel really grounded to the ground. I mean, these tiny little details, they matter because you're making a first impression. And games are so damn competitive. So once we get that just right, we then begin to introduce other concepts for the player, including golems, big things, and small things, and to really balance that out, and then also release and test parts of that to some of our fans. And so for me, it's more of a sequencing. Of what we're doing. I was like, do we get the art style right? Do we have enough polygons on the screen? Do we have the art budget? You know, this is going to be a mobile first game. And so we're really pushing what's possible on mobile devices to the max extreme. Mm. All these things are difficult to do. Yeah. And so, but we're definitely on track. I'm very happy with where we're at with the art style of the game. We were, you know, deeply inspired by Elden Ring. It's a great game. You know, we're deeply inspired by player controls of a lot of different console games. And we're bringing that feel and that quality to the mobile device in addition to the large toy box experience. Mm-hmm. And so there are a number of innovations here when you take them as a whole in experiencing a new game for a player. And so there are many tough challenges for us ahead, but we have spent a good amount of time for smart thinking of how to overcome these things and to deliver a balanced, satisfying experience that's familiar yet unique at the same time.
I guess for all game developers, but especially you're talking us through there, which is you have a fundamental aspect of the game, which is how the camera's going to work out, which is sort of a key part of how the player interacts with the game. And that's going to take you however many, many months or years to sort of sort out. And once it's sorted out, the player will just take that as a given and it will seem like, well, that's the camera. I mean, that's why is that a problem? It's just a good camera system. And you'll be like, no, but that took us like a year. You didn't see the 99 other sort of broken things that we had to get through. But I guess that's just the part of being the game.
The standard is you shouldn't have to think about the camera system.
It's
That's our benchmark.
So we've sort of spoken a bit about this being a Web3 game. You've not really spoken, I don't think, in much detail about that sort of stuff. You do have a PFP NFT collection called the Hopeful out. So I guess if we can talk a bit more detail about how do you see why do you have a collection like that? Because those are not, as I understand them, going to be sort of, they're not characters in the game. They're more like a badge of, you know, of community sort of status there. So can you talk a little bit about why you took that approach? And I don't know if there's anything you can say at the moment about sort of how you actually see the sort of eventual use of this sort of ownership in NFTs. Is it just you own characters in the game or sort of deeper than that?
You know, because we have such profound respect for not having all the answers in Web3, we wanted to provide a gift to the community where, you know, they had a game pass as opposed to an in-game asset with unknown unknowns about the game that we were making. And so, you know, for us, and this is something that we see, I think, you know, in the first generation of potential Web3 games, is that when you make commitments to the community and you start pre-selling in-game assets, you put yourself in a very tough position, in my opinion, where now the players have an expectation because they paid for these things, these in-game assets, and they have expectations of the type of game you're building. And the developers feel an incredible urgency to get something in the hand of the players because the players are asking, when is the game coming out? And so you create this situation that's very difficult to overcome, where the developers feel obligated to release something that's not ready, or maybe they change their mind later on and say, these in-game assets don't make sense for our game. And so we didn't want to be in that position. And so one of the things that we could absolutely count on is we're going to release a great game. And therefore, let's give free passes to our game. And let's build a community around it that can help inform some of our decision-making for feedback without risking what we need to build and what we need to discover as we're building. So that was a very thoughtful process of not disappointing our players and not committing to things that we simply don't have answers to. And so we are a, first and foremost, we're a game company. We're an RPG game company. And we are first, our first game for this studio, for this company, is that our game will be Web3 sensitive.
That's a good term. I've not heard that before. Yeah. Web3 sensitive.
We don't think of ourselves as a Web3 game.
No.
We think of ourselves as a RPG game company. Right. And it just so happens, as we continue to evolve our thinking, how can Web3 enhance the gameplay and the entertaining value of what we're building? I don't know. So I don't know how old you are. It looks like you have some gray hair like me.
Oh, yeah.
And you have a much more beautiful beard than I do. I grow hair.
I'm just lazy.
I have a few patches.
I need to show you.
Do you remember mobile games when they came out around 2009 for the touchscreen and 2010? And everybody was so obsessed with the touchscreen, the technology, right? Do you remember that? And they're like, oh, you got to build a game like Cut the Rope or Fruit Ninja. And those were great games, okay? But those games built a game loop around the technology. And guess what? Those games are no longer top 100 to this day. It was the true games with depth that leveraged the technology in a way that made sense for the game that ended up doing well, including Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, my last game. And so I think of the same thing with Web3. At the very beginning, everybody was talking about tokens and NFTs and land. And they were centering the technology and then building a game around that. And I think we're now in the next cycle for Web3, where people are now thinking about the gameplay first and the traditional fun aspects of the game. And then they're thinking about how to utilize this breakthrough technology to enhance the player experience. And so we're in Web3, we're going through this a lot faster. It's contracted than we went with mobile. And so hopefully that helps. This is why we say we are Web3 sensitive. We will never do anything within our game that takes away or corrupts the entertaining value of a game, because we believe one of our principles is that the game, for it to be sustainable, it must be grounded in traditional gameplay and fun, first and foremost. And let that become the engine that drives the ecosystem around it and within it. This is why we say we're Web3 sensitive.
And I guess compared to us, I mean, I'm trying to remember back, but I don't remember for Galaxy of Heroes there being a lot of sort of pre-talk about that game, because obviously it's a sort of sensitive game in a license and sort of stuff. So obviously this Web3 building blockchain games is very different, because I mean you have, in for your example, we have these PFPs, but in general sort of everyone talks about community as being very important. Have you actually found that to be sort of a helpful thing, or has that been maybe less of a helpful thing? How's the sort of making a game in the open you know, when you, particularly at the beginning, when you have all this sort of uncertainty, or you sort of have certainty where you want to go, but you have all this uncertainty about how to get there. Has that been helpful, or has that just been felt like a bit too pressurized?
So first, in answering that question, we have to define what good looks like.
Mm.
And so let me define what good looks like to us.
Mm.
What good looks like for us is, do we have an avid fan base in the thousands that can help provide us feedback on the game we're making? That's one.
Mm.
Two, as we begin to build this game, can we increase the number of players who are going to be available to play the game and want to play the game when we release the game?
Mm-hmm.
And so let's go back to the first point in terms of what good looks like. Because we have, you know, we released 5,555 free mints, and but there's about 2,000, a little over 2,000 holders. Mm-hmm. That implies that we'll have potentially anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people who can test the first, you know, release of our game. When I say release, I mean test release, and then we're going to take it down towards the end of the year. So for me, that's what good looks like for community.
Okay.
And it looks like we're going to achieve that goal. And so, you know, a lot of people talk about community, and I think they mean a lot of different things.
Mm.
And so, for example, if you are a high-end NFT project and you continue to mint new things and your NFTs mint other things, and then you have these mini games, for them, community is everything.
Mm.
And so they have a very different definition of what good looks like. And so, you know, the short answer to your question is it depends. For us, we have defined what good looks like. And yes, for us, community is important for the reasons that I've outlined.
Mm-hmm. So you haven't, in no way have you found it sort of a distracting sort of thing where every day you go into your Discord and some people are asking, you know, difficult questions or stupid questions. Whereas if you're making a Web2 game, you would probably start making the first year of the game. You wouldn't have announced it at all. And then you would have been, you know, it's just a very different way of sort of building when you're building with sort of blockchain assets, I think, or within that sort of ecosystem.
I think because we have managed the expectations that these NFTs are game passes, and because we gave these for free, and because these are not in-game assets, I think the expectations are very different if these were in-game assets and we made elaborate promises.
Yeah.
And so we didn't do those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was a free mint. So what we're finding with our community is that they're incredibly patient. And we do release test art and test things within our Discord. And we do that because, you know, we have holders of PFP who are engaged and they provide us feedback, a great feedback loop.
Hmm.
And so I'm very grateful that we have this community because they have been very helpful in answering some questions for us.
Hmm.
And so we have a different type of relationship with them than say perhaps another game team who did things differently, who could be more demanding, you know, who could expect more things. And so we have a different community, and it's because of how we set it up from the very beginning in terms of managing expectations.
Well, yeah, I guess the sort of the key thing there is as soon as you have a live token, then everyone's all
very emotional.
Doesn't matter what you're doing, everyone's just looking at the token price. So you've done well by not doing that, I suppose.
When you have a volatile asset like a token, you know, of course there's going to be emotions because it just doesn't go up.
Well, depends on the cycle, doesn't it? I mean,
right. Yeah. And for, you know, for many, I think speculators in Web3, which I think make up the great bulk of who's participating and who's really active, you know, they do have a game. Mm. You know, they're playing the game of wealth.
Yeah.
And so for them, you know, tokens and NFTs, for many of them, not all, but for many of them, this is a game of how to game the wealth. and aggregate as much positive numbers as possible. And so we're very aware of that. And that's not the game we're making. No. You know, this is not a game of wealth that we're building. Mm. We're building a game that facilitates fantasies, and not generating wealth. That is not our design at all. And so that, I'd say that encompasses probably, if I were to guess, anywhere from 95 to 99% of all projects.
that's pretty, harsh. I'm trying to think if I agree with that. I don't think I agree with that. I think that's a little bit. Well, I'm trying to think. I moderate a big list of blockchain games, which has about 800 games on there, and I think there's at least 50 that aren't. So that, from the percentages on that, that would be 0.5% there, wouldn't it? So maybe 1%. So maybe, we're not too far disaligned. Yeah, maybe something like that.
I would say if you were to ask me last year, it'd be 90%. Yeah. But because we're in a new cycle and there are more traditional game players who are entering the markets. This is why I said 95%.
Five percent. Now I've done the math. I actually sort of maybe agree with you a little bit. Talking about that sort of point, you know, we've had, I guess when you were starting to sort of think about getting back into the space, that was at the time when obviously the bull cycle was at its height and Axie Infinity was going through the roof. And then we had this very strong backlash against, what we would see as a certain subset of sort of, I don't know, hardcore players or a certain type of gamer who really went against NFTs for various reasons. I think that sort of softened in part because of current market conditions. But, you know, as someone who, you know, I assume knows loads of people in the games industry, have you sort of felt there's been a sort of softening of attitudes towards sort of Web3 as, you know, projects like yours, which are, you know, clearly coming from very experienced teams who have made lots of games, who are not trying to do some sort of, you know, quick sort of a buck sort of mentality. Do you think, you know, blockchain is becoming a little less sort of, political, and people are sort of gaming designers and stuff are thinking a bit more about the sort of fundamentals of it, or is that still a bit of a way off?
I think in the first cycle of Web3 games, due to the revolutionary nature of players for the first time, I think owning their assets, there was a lot of volatility and almost like a Cambrian explosion of speculative ideas about what worked and what didn't. And that's pretty common with technology. And what came out of that were some interesting models that were, you know, eventually not sustainable, right? And so I share that because we're now in the sober phase where there's, I think, less volatility in the thinking and the ideas, in a return to, I think, more traditional philosophies on making games. And I think that's a great time for Web3 and games. And it's a great time because there's going to be a lot more accurate thinking about what the gameplay mechanics or the durable mechanics that are going to come from Web3 in the future. And so I'm happy this is where we're at. And this is the transition, because more people are now talking about fun. You know, you manage a list of 800 and about 50 of those games, you know, which is about 7%. And, you know, they're going back to core principles of game design and fun. And so to me, it further validates that we're in this sober phase. And I think some great games are going to come out over the next few years. And I'm really excited about that, because I look forward to learning from them.
Absolutely makes sense. But do you think at some point, I don't know if you can answer this for your particular sort of project, but at some point, do you think that something like having an in-game token that is a cryptocurrency is something that sort of blockchain games need to do, because that sort of ties the economy together? Or do you think that's sort of too reductive thinking on my part, and actually there's a whole bunch of different ways in which you can use these sort of assets, whether they're NFTs or tokens or, you know, whatever, soulbound tokens or?
So the way I think about it is I ask myself, you know, what is the utility of this token? But to answer that question, we first have to ask ourselves, you know, what is the game pattern for the game that we're building?
Yep.
And then we ask the question, how does the token facilitate more fun within the game, right?
Okay. Mm.
And so we have our own tokenomic design that does that, called the token of fun. And this is why we say that we're Web3 sensitive.
Mm.
This is something that we designed in July, August of last year. And once we designed this and we were happy with it, because it facilitates the traditional fun within the game, you know, we moved on. Mm. And we kept it in a box that we're going to come back to again. We can ease our mind in terms of how we're going to utilize it in a way that really focuses on utility for the player. And so the way I think about it is, when players come into our game, they're not going to know they're playing a Web3 sensitive game.
Mm.
It's going to have an easy onboarding process. We're not going to ask you for your wallet and all that stuff.
Mm.
There is no hurdles or gymnastics to get into the game. And so players are going to go into it and feel like a traditional free-to-play game. And it just so happens that as they fall in love with the game, for the players that do, they're going to discover that the world itself is Web3 sensitive. And it could be also token sensitive. And so this is, now you understand why we call it Web3 sensitive. And it's because we literally mean that.
Hmm.
And so that is our current plans. And that's how we're doing it. And we could be one of the first companies to implement it this way, where the token itself, should we do it, is a literal mathematical proxy for how much enjoyment players are having with it. And I think that's the way it should be, as a utility of fun.
Very intriguing. I'm trying to think in my head how that would work, but we'll have to wait until you break open that box, I guess, a bit further down the line to see how you're doing that.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Mark. That was really fascinating.
Oh, you're very welcome, John. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
No, we'll have to come back at the start of the year when the playable's out, and the first playable, so we can have a dig into it there. And of course, if you want to have access to that first playable, as I say, what they're called now the hopeful NFT collection is around on Ethereum. I think last time I looked, floor price is about 0.25 ETH. So I mean, not nothing, but equally not one of these crazy prices. So you can I guess look at the artwork and the stuff that Azra Games are putting out, and try and work out if you think your fun quotient would be enough to want to get in there early or not. Not investment advice, fun. You wouldn't have investment advice. You'd have fun investment advice. That's I'm seeing all the way all this sort of fun stuff can sort of spiral out of control. But anyway, thanks very much to Mark for his time, and thanks to you for watching, listening, however you're consuming the podcast. Please subscribe via your sort of platform of choice. Every episode we're talking to the people who are, you know, sort of I think in a hopeful way, sort of struggling with some of the challenges of blockchain, and we're starting to see now the first sort of games coming out that are really have been thoughtful around this sort of stuff, and I think are sort of synthesizing all the great stuff about games that we've seen for the last 35 years, and this sort of new interesting ownership model as well. So I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am, and come back for the next episode next week. See you then.